Welcome to the Friendly Geordies podcast, where we are playing the best game we've ever thought of, which is how many books can you fit on your head?
Yeah, and that's exactly how it's supposed to be said. You can't just say how many books can you fit on your head. It's how many books can you fit on your head?
Yeah, you remember the inflection on books. I went down an octave, and I should be hit like kids in the 1800s that were training to be opera singers.
Okay, so, all right, Jordan, you go first. So now we've got a selection of books here.
Because we noticed that Ali has books, and we have heads. Yeah. The game writes itself.
Yeah, it's a poor man's game, except the poor man needs to have books. So, okay, so we start off with smaller books. If you qualify...
The learned man's game?
The learned man's game. If you can't put it inside your head, at least put it on your head. All right. So we start with the smaller books.
Yep.
You've got to stand up for this. You can't just sit down and play this game.
All right. So we're starting with Beyond Fundamentalism, Confronting Religious Extremism by, your boy Reza Aslan. Top stuff. Sam Harris would be very proud. And so I'll be putting this book on my head to see if I can balance it. And the rules are that you start off with small books, then you move on to medium-sized books, and then your large books, which are your constitutional law books that you learn in UNSW law, something along those lines, all right? It's a subjective measurement, but we're starting with a small one. And feel free to play at home.
Yeah, feel free to use your constitutional law books.
For something. We know you don't read them.
All right, so...
uni jokes.
Okay, so you've managed to do one.
Yep.
Now you go with the second one. This one's The Economics of Poverty, edited by Burton A. Weisbrod, but there's no name of the author here.
Sounds like a riveting read, but sounds even better to put on top of your head. So we're on two books.
All right, perfect. Now
I'm currently the world champion. So this is how it works. Everyone at home, giving you scores, will know if you're lying. If someone says they put 1,000 books on their head, I'm going to say, well... I haven't met you before, so I can't rule out that you've put 1,000 books on your head, but it sounds a little bit sus. Nonetheless, you'll be the champion. I'm currently up to three books.
Three books. Now it's getting a little thicker. This is A Short History of the USSR.
Short is right. It's probably about... This is about as long as a Goosebumps novel.
All right, we're struggling already. Okay.
Hey, this is just a really fun Jenga.
Isn't this how you're supposed to learn modeling, too? If you can, like, balance a book on your head and walk, then you know how to catwalk?
Yeah, in the tens. No one does that now.
Hey, did you have to do that in your modeling days?
Balance books on my head?
Yes.
No, surprisingly, I didn't.
Okay, one more. Marx and Engels on literature and art.
Have you read these books, Ali?
Yeah, I've read the... I haven't read The Short History of USSR.
Okay, we're fumbling. So we're currently on four
books.
No, hold
up. You stay there.
Can we get to the hand?
From now on,
that is called the hand trick. If you reach the hand trick, you get to give yourself a pat on the back.
And now we've got a standard-sized book. It's about the size of the third Harry Potter, A History of Pakistan.
So we should probably move up to the big ones because I've realized that you also have to put books on your head. As are the rules.
No, I'm gonna go the other way. I'm gonna go bigger and two smaller.
That's not the rules.
That's just the rule. Like you came up rules for yourself. I come up rules for me.
Ali, this is a long tradition game that has lasted for probably 3 minutes at this point. Okay. An Unfinished History of the World.
This is
by Hugh Thomas.
I recommend this one. This is a good one.
Is it?
Yeah.
Sounds kind of boring.
It's a little thick. But
the whole world.
Oh shit.
Hey, this has balanced it out better.
Yeah. One,
I've
two,
done it.
Three, four, five, six books. Okay.
Can I get to the number 10?
Number 10?
The magic number 10. Thank you very much, by the way, for all the people that donate to Patreon. Clearly, your money is going to a good cause.
Okay. Genghis Khan, The Making of the Modern World.
I don't even know if I can reach the top. You're going to have to put it on the top of my head.
Okay, I'll do it.
I think this is... I don't know if I can get it. Can I get it? Ah!
God!
Six books and counting!
And you...
Read and weep! No, that's the whole point. Don't read and weep. Put the reading material on your head.
The unfinished history of the world remains unfinished. could not get its proper climax. All right, so my turn. Do I go with different books? Because I like the idea of us reading out the titles before, too.
All right, well...
Okay, so...
This is very unfair for you because we've chosen all of your small books first because, as everyone knows, Ali is pretty much that character from that Channel 7 show that had a reading worm at the front that goes, "Reading's fun!" He is that worm.
Oh, all right. So we start
you wanted
off
to
with
start off with a big book.
Yeah, so I could right, give
well,
it a better
very
base.
This against convention, but...
Okay.
All right, well, we'll start with Australian Constitutional Law and Theory. By Tony Blackshield and George Williams. Write your own book, you lazy bums.
The thing is, I can handle the first one. The thing is, the first one is already quite unstable. Because it's massive. All right.
Well, you chose this, Ali. Right. This is not
okay,
convention.
Get me an equal size book.
I don't know what your theory is behind this. It seems like you're doing a Mythbusters course at this point. See if... Okay, sorry. The Islamilis, the history.
You can't do this. You have to read it out. What's the title?
The Ismaili. But it's got one of those weird French C's in it.
You don't have to read the French C's. That's just them trying to be cool, the publisher.
The Ismailis, their history and doctrines by Farad Daftari. Here's a good idea, Farad. Speak English.
So Ismailis are a sect within Islam. It's a history about them. Okay.
Ooh, sounds fascinating.
This is
okay.
This
so
is not
going to
work.
Yep,
this is
yep.
not going to work. Hold up.
So the official count at the moment for Ali is 2 books.
But they're way bigger than yours.
You don't get this out, Ali. You go,
fuck
it. It could only fit 2 books.
No, wait. It didn't fall off as
yeah,
yet.
Because you caught it.
No, hold up.
This is such a brazen abuse of what this game was supposed to be about, which is fitting books on your head.
Okay, read out the title first.
Marx and Engels on Religion. Stop loving Marx so much, you commie.
Yeah, it's phase that I went through. Okay, one more.
You seem embarrassed.
One more.
And we've got The Story of Philosophy.
Highly recommend.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's one of the best books ever.
Yeah. Not going to read it. And then we've got Engels, The Housing Question. Very relevant for today. Am I right, millennial? You haven't?
No.
It's not a book.
Put it on
it's
my fucking
magazine.
Head.
It's the size of a Reader's Digest.
Okay, that's it. There it is. That's it.
That is incredible. So that went down from 50 pages. You couldn't fit Engels, The Housing Question on your head.
Which is a pamphlet.
That is
boss
this
beard.
Is the same a thickness of what you get when someone hands you a shortened version of the Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah.
When someone is handing out things when they're a hard
the sort
pushing.
Of book that they hand out, you think it's free because it's so thin, but they go, $40 please, and you go, no, fuck you.
And then they look offended at you.
Doesn't
we know
can't
the dance.
Afford knowledge. What a wanker.
Well, that was fun. And
that
by
was...
fun I mean a waste of time. Now,
yeah, it was all right. I'm just like annoyed. I have to put all these books back onto the rack now. So thanks for making my life even simpler.
What are we doing next?
Good questions. Because
that was just a roller coaster
that one.
Of greatness so far.
Oh yeah, we've got some news update actually.
What?
For all of those that haven't been following the news. What's the best? What's the? It depends on your opinion on this. But Alex Jones just got booted from YouTube, Facebook, and Apple.
And let's not forget the big one, Spotify.
It's the future. Also, if you're listening to us on Spotify,
stop.
No, let me know because I don't know. You can't check stats on Spotify, or at least I don't know how to check stats on Spotify.
Mm.
And now we're on Spotify because...
Since when?
Since the last 3-4 months because they approved us. It took them 7 months to approve us because they had to make sure that Rocco Cerfetti is a real man or not to make sure we're not
what
fake
is that? That's hate speech saying that he has a huge schlong for a long period of our life as well. Probably as long as he's been a porn star, we were talking about his career. We only moved into politics as a side gig.
Yeah, like,
it's mostly about Rocco Siffredi's pile drive techniques.
Yeah, we're basically just porn journalists. That's a good job.
Does that exist?
I'm pretty sure it is. I'm seeing like an Italian man who goes around and interviews porn stars and sometimes gets to have sex with them too.
Yeah, it's pretty smutty. It seems even smuttier than being a pornographer. At least the guy that does Max Hardcore or something, it's his business. But this man documents people watching other people having sex. It's another level of voyeurism.
Someone's got to do it, you know?
I don't know if someone has to do that. Why, is that believe, really a market
you believe
for that?
Sex is a private affair and it shouldn't be displayed in public?
I mean, everyone. Every time you ever do hear of someone going, "Hey, we had sex in an alleyway once," you're like, "Cool, you're a freak,
super freak." Yeah, that's right. Especially, no
clearly
one. Okay, so what's the worst place or like the most fucked up place that you've had sex in?
My bed. My sex life is as Christian as you can possibly get. I think I've only ever had sex in the missionary position.
Have you ever been caught offside?
What's a caught offside? What is that? Once I tried to twist my peenie around in someone's vagina and it really hurt.
I think like getting caught offside is just like, have you ever done anal, mate?
Is that what it is?
I think so. Ali G came up with it.
There is a real reason for pornographer journalists there. He's telling us new facts.
Ali G came up with that while interviewing Beckham. Because he was like, hey, Beckham, have you ever done anal? And he was like, no. He's like, you ain't telling me you ain't never been caught offside? Greatest human being on earth.
I do really like his late night humor. Because that's all British TV is after a certain period of time. It's just Neighbours and a bunch of trashy journalists interviewing people that are really open about their sex life. They are porn journalists. Yeah, there is a market for it. Good on that Italian guy.
Okay, good on that. And also, like, I want to tell my most fucked up place that I've had sex in, but like yours,
it's gonna be
is,
way worse.
It's, I think you know, because I told you. After.
I bet you've had sex on an ant nest. I liked the bite.
Shit, no, no. I told you about it right after. So most people have kind of done a bit of it. So I was, let's just say I've watched the first 15 minutes of that, what's that movie? The black, the movie that's supposed to be like, Emancipation of All of Africans. The fucking superhero movie.
Black Panther.
Black Panther. Let's just say I've seen the first 15-20 minutes of that movie, and that movie.
That's right. Yeah. And there was only one guy at the very far end of the cinema.
No, it was a fucking full cinema.
Oh my god.
So
how did you get away with it?
Well, good question. I'm glad you asked that, because at one point it wasn't in my control and I wanted to get out of it, but I was gonna watch a movie with a girlfriend of mine at the time, and yeah, anyways, yeah,
this is really this is the moments of you. Everyone always says to me that our job is fantastic and they wish that they could do what I do. Wow, that was a well-constructed sentence. And the reason why I'm in the chair talking to you people, because I know English done good. But people are always saying that that's a good job, and that your job is good. But what they don't understand is that being perpetually 12 kind of sucks when you're in your late 20s.
No,
like,
it's the only way to live.
What are we getting paid for right now? This is the conversation that you had when you were having a sleepover. You're like, oh, what do you want to put your penis in someone's vagina? No way, that's gross. But we're past that stage now, but we're still having that same conversation. So now it's just, yeah, I'd sex you in a cinema once. For money?
not for money. That was for free. The story is for money. Anyways, the fucking segment was Alex Jones get booted.
How?
How did we get to this?
There's no need to demean ourselves that much then.
Yeah, so we both have like our conclusions about this are the same. So if you haven't been following the news, Alex Jones has been completely wiped out of the internet, even his massive showdown with Piers Morgan.
So strange, because he really?
No, I don't know. I'm just saying like that. Was it uploaded by InfoWars or was it a CNN?
Nah, upload? That was Screen Grab or whatever it's called, I reckon.
What?
But actually, probably Alex Jones definitely probably put it on his channel.
So why are you pissed off about it? He's spreading false information that is literally destroying this planet.
Mate, I say Sandy Hook. That's why it annoys me, because everybody always says, as they interviewed someone on Twitter, which is the only social media channel that hasn't banned them. It's pathetic watching videos on Twitter.
Wait, is it like Snapchat or like Instagram where you can only watch 30 seconds, or can Twitter upload?
I think it can go on and on. It's just nobody does watch it because it's pathetic.
Okay.
But they were interviewing a bunch of people, and anyone who was against Alex Jones, for Alex Jones being banned, they always brought this up. I think it's a good thing that someone who spreads misinformation, specifically, and I'm citing this, Sandy Hook. The only reason they know about Sandy Hook is because the entire mainstream media latched onto it.
Yeah.
There's millions of things that Alex Jones says every day that is total bullshit. Way funnier.
Excuse me, does that make it okay?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
This is what I don't understand. Who is watching Alex Jones for real news? And it's performance art.
And the only reason why we know Alex Jones got booted is because of a pod listener.
Yeah?
Shout out to James Kahn, the American listener who's...
The man that gave us Texan ties.
Yeah, the man who gave a few...
But hates Alex Jones, so...
In fact,
you're pretty on an even scale with me, Alex.
I'm pretty sure he hates us now, too. Because after Trump got elected, we've heard zero communication from the man. Tell us if you're listening to this. And since then, he's on my Facebook, and all he uploads is despicable people that glorify Trump because they think he's funny. So I think he got off the Friendly Geordies podcast wagon some time ago.
No, get on. This is what nobody understands. Global warming is way past doing anything about it. Just laugh at the wreckage.
Yeah.
We all know this.
Yeah, you should have been stressed when Al Gore was talking about it.
Yeah. In 2000.
Hey, that's not okay.
You should have voted in the Bush v. Gore election if you actually cared.
I want to understand the rationale for like booting Alex Jones, though. What happened to the First Amendment?
They were saying, well, because this is what all... it's so good watching all these right-wing channels on YouTube that borrow heavily from Alex Jones. In fact, I would say that their only research is to read InfoWars.
Oh shit.
It's so good that is the New York Times of
alt-right.
Yeah. Of your Milo Yiannopoulos of the world.
InfoWars.
And it deserves to be. I'm really glad that InfoWars is where it is. I'm genuinely upset that it has been taken off of YouTube and Facebook. Because honestly, YouTube, it's like Eminem. It feels so empty without him.
Yeah, that's right. He also, Alex Jones also
the
gave
net
me...
The feels lighter without him, yeah. Don't you think?
It's a much shallow world now.
I think so as well.
I think I see everything in black and white now.
Me too! Alex Jones was the color of YouTube.
But he was... Okay, it's all fun and games when it's funny, but he was literally destroying the planet, so it's good that he's off.
But so was all that entire ilk. So was Matt Drudge, so was Rush Limbaugh, so is Glenn Beck. But yeah, none of them are entertaining. Rush Limbaugh's kind of entertaining, but that's mostly because of how sweaty and fat he is.
You know, and it's also like Rush Limbaugh's the original Fox News. Yeah. Man, Rush Limbaugh was funny when like it was so hard to find funny shit in politics. And you go, Rush, thanks for bringing a ray of
sunshine.
Thanks for being you. And Alex Jones came onto the scene.
He was just 2.0 Rush.
Yeah. But remember that that interview that Alex Jones did of Noam Chomsky? So civilized.
Interview he did with Noam.
If you know.
Oh, except for the end. That was incredible. The first half an hour really highlighted the differences between people who think that Alex Jones is intelligent, and he is. He's clearly a hyper intelligent man. That anyone who is able to build a business that needs 50 warehouses to function is an intelligent
and
man.
Mostly for super male vitality, which works.
As we have tested out, except for you stopped testing it because you were legitimately scared that it was adversely affecting your health, and you smoke. And you were scared of Superman.
Which I'm pretty sure was just barbecue sauce. It tasted exactly like barbecue sauce. And what? Did you have all of yours?
Yeah.
What happened?
I started having yours as well.
And now I am a YouTube celebrity. In fact, when you started taking it,
I'm pretty sure I'm less muscly as a result. If anything, it made me decrease in muscle.
Alex Jones is not a muscly man. You can just see, even his before and after are just like in.
No. In the after, he's put on a fake tan.
Yeah, that was a different. And in one, he's just letting his fucking punch go out, and the other one, he's just sucking it in. That's the only difference. And so, so basically,
why was this man banned?
Because he's a con man.
I don't understand. How is anything that Alex Jones says remotely more dangerous than what Rice Gum says? What's the difference?
The difference is Rice Gum is taken to be a trivial YouTube star. And
but how
Alex
is Alex Jones,
Jones
not?
But Alex, dude, okay, so we think of him as a joke, but there are people that think of him as like, oh my God, what's the next piece of wisdom coming out of this man's
who,
mouth?
Who, the Dome King? Yeah, the guy that used to be on our podcast at the very beginning, who used to believe that the Earth is flat, used to get his news from InfoWars. But that's
fact,
because
he introduced
insane.
Us to InfoWars. We must give him credit where credit is due. He's introduced us to InfoWars. He's introduced us to what was that guy who was like obsessed with talking that black man who hated other black people?
Tommy Sotomayor. All right, this is it. Go look up Urban Alex Jones. Tommy Sotomayor. Do yourself a favor. You will not regret it. I think he's mellowed out in his old age a little bit, which is a shame because that's the real sadness of Alex Jones. He kept getting crazier and crazier.
Yeah, he
hasn't peaked yet.
Tommy isn't shitting on beasties anymore.
Yeah.
Man,
he's just talking about how black people are pathetic for not recognizing that Donald Trump is a boss.
Dude,
and he used to have this spiritual advisor that used to come onto his show. Alright, so to give everyone a quick rundown, I know that we're talking about Alex Jones, but get with the train. We're now talking about Tommy Sotomayor. All he used to do, clearly, because he used to be dating a black woman that divorced him. And so now he hates all fat black women. And he's a fat black man.
That's his his main agenda. He doesn't even give a shit about Donald Trump or politics. He just hates other
quote unquote beasties.
Beasties. Who's basically just like black women.
He categorizes all black women. If they're a hot black chick, they're a queen. And if they're an ugly black chick, they're a beastie. And he has this spiritual advisor. Oh, I forgot about Tommy. You know what, as well, I've got to say this. The Dome King, definitely, as a result of Alex Jones being banned from YouTube because of this Sandy Hook thing and the fact that he had to retract it, I bet you the Dome King thinks that Alex Jones is a psyop or a sellout for backtracking on the fact that Sandy Hook was a hoax.
Did he backtrack on that?
Because he was really into conspiracy theories where he go, that plane didn't even crash. In fact, it didn't even exist.
Yeah, no, he's been convincing me that so this was his last thing. He was saying, well, the Earth is obviously flat, right? So I was asking him why, like, the sun, you can see the sun sometimes and you can't see it other. And he was like, because it's a spotlight, right? See, it's a spotlight next to the stars. And I was like, okay, how far are the stars? He's like, they're just light bulbs 2 kilometers away. And the spotlight just, like, goes over countries and gives them sunshine. And I was like, wait, so are you saying that only a country will get sunshine at one time? He's like, yeah, that's why, like, it's, that's why it's, like, night in the U.S. and it's, like, daytime here in Australia. I'm like, but it's not just night in the U.S.
What does that make Canada? Is it night or not night?
He doesn't know. He's just like, oh, well, it depends. They might have gotten 2 spotlights. Yeah, it's a dumb
It just flashed through my mind that my girlfriend during lunch told us that all of our friends are bums. And we vehemently defended that point. But it is indefensible.
Dude, how much... Okay, I admit that all our friends are bums and kind of fucked up. But at the same time, how much more interesting they are than, like... Yeah, so my friend is an investment banker and he's currently in the Cayman Islands.
It's not even close. Give me Miss Love... borderline having to convince him every week to not join the Christian militia. Over that guy. Yeah. Any day.
And but you know, someone asked me that question quite recently. Cause I was talking about Miss Love and I was saying something like this and I was laughing and they were like and they were asking me, how were you friends with Miss Love? With his strong opinions. And this is my answer. I genuinely love Miss Love. And I love him because, like, I would rather have a bunch of friends that have really different views to me than basically...
Not even different. Bizarre.
Bizarrely different than my own. Because if you hang around... Like, you know, the hipsters that some we sometimes end up...
having to go to their parties.
Yeah, I mean, this is the best way I can put it without revealing too much.
Can one female hipster have a shade of skin that is a little bit darker than milk? That's all I'm asking. But continue, Ali.
No, I prefer it the other way.
Yeah, you would like that. That's fine. You like the fact that they all look like they're ghosts. And they probably are. They're always obsessed with old, creaky houses.
But they're all caricatures of each other.
Yeah.
And you're like, what? How is your life interesting? You basically know what the other person is going to say. This one guy goes like, did you watch that Jim Carrey documentary on Netflix where he pretends to be someone else? He's so good. He's like, it's the best documentary ever. And everyone's in agreement.
Yeah.
No one's like, Dom King would just come up and say, hold up, that movie and Jim Carrey is basically a reptile.
Yes, or say... Clearly, the best documentary of all time is Alex Jones's The Obama Deception.
That is way more true. Interesting. It makes my life better.
Yes! This is what we're saying. Just be friends with a bunch of mental patients. You won't regret it. But anyway, we're talking about...
Hold up. We have to, because the next segment is...
Wait, can I just finish? Okay. Before we get onto that segment, I know that we're always going off and people are starting to get angry at us, but at the same time, fuck you, give us money. but the next one is... Sorry, I've just got to go back to Tommy Sotomayor spiritual advisor, who was this very tall, lanky black guy that used to sell his version of Alex Jones supplements, except for instead of saying that it was kind of... it just make you an ultimate meal. Instead of that, his spin was, this gonna clean out your chakras, baby.
And so, more legit.
At least he knew a little bit about Sufism or something, I guess. Anyway. He was talking about his chakras. Ascent with Tommy Sotomayor once to becoming... spiritually enlightened. And it's the best sentence I've ever heard in my life. He goes, yeah, I have to be on the streets, hustling, pimping, anything I could do for a dollar. Then one day, I came across the Bhagavad Gita. I finished that book,
and I became a spiritual bowler.
Spiritual bowlers. What have you been doing with your life? Oh, man, that guy anyway, needs to be revived.
You got to look up Tommy Sotomayor.
Yeah, Tommy Sotomayor.
Next segment.
No, but the next segment is basically a take on the previous one. What the fuck is Tubbs doing? Exclamation mark.
This is so weird.
So for all those
just
people
bitching about our friends to randoms that don't know our friends, everyone would hate this.
Know.
Our friends would hate this. They would hate this.
Girlfriends would hate this. So no, but like Tobbs is if you've watched the Yilmaz videos, Tobbs makes
episode 3, I believe it is.
Is it? Is it
maybe
the one where they're stealing the candy?
That's the one.
That's the one. So that's Tobbs.
Yeah, him and Yilmaz used to spot each other, much like how friends that go to the gym spot each other for lifting. And they were doing that as well because they started going to the gym and then they started stealing protein bars. Even though they're not that expensive.
Did Tobbs go to a gym?
Yeah.
He looks like a man who's basically...
He looks like a stop
now.
Sign.
Yeah.
Stop with sign. Dreads.
Yeah, pretty soon
someone put a mop on the head of a stop sign.
And makes sense. He's always next to lollipop girls. Yeah, so what the fuck is Tobbs doing?
So, I've been out of contact with Torbs for a while. I came back in.
God, bitch.
He got kicked out of his house because, quote, I refuse to pay for rent. Why? You've been paid for the last 5 years. Yeah, but I realised it's bullshit. I'm not doing it. So I got kicked out. So he was just living in the house until they served him with an eviction notice.
Oh,
it's just
really?
Seeing how long he could run out the clock. And it turns out it's 6 weeks.
Hey, good to know, actually. That could be like your end plan at some point. Like, hey, I've got 6 weeks, all right, fuck off.
This is the other thing about being friends with a bunch of freaks. They push the limits of what societal convention is. So you know how far you could go before you radically fall off the edge of the cliff, right? And he's done that.
No.
Because I said, what are you doing now? And he goes, living in a van, dude. And
that sounds like a shit, but he makes it sound like we should all be living in a van. And he was going,
but it was where he was naturally supposed to be. This man loves weed and loves surfing. Of course he's going to end up living in a van that has paintings of a globe in the background and a white hand shaking hands with a black hand.
You've been to the van?
Yeah. So he made me sleep. He made me lie on his van bed while he was driving because he had another guest in there that he just picked up, which was someone that he was dealing weed to. And so he said, get in. And then I lifted my head up for a second to ask him a question, going, oh, Fabs, do you know if there's something I could maybe use as a rudimentary seatbelt or something? He goes, dude, I am not going to jail if they see you at the back. Get your head down.
Wait, so he did have a seat. What about the passenger seat next to him?
No, he picked up someone and said, get in the back.
Oh, really? So he picked up someone else who he shouldn't have because his van...
Well, to do another illegal activity, but he was less concerned with dealing a drug and the implications of that than someone sitting in the back without a seatbelt on. And, and anyway...
Movers and shakers. Okay, no, but where does he park his van?
Well, this is his whole shtick now. $1 million views, $1,000 van, dude.
What does that mean?
It means people spend $10 million for the view that I have, dude. And I just get up, eat a banana, go for a surf, do about 10 hours of work a week. It's all you have to do when you don't rent. And so you're really jealous of his life when you think about that, that he only has to do 10 hours of work a week to sustain himself. But then you remember, he doesn't have a shower.
Oh, shit.
So he always stinks. He's homeless. He has no money. And he still fucks about 5 to 6 random chicks a week.
That's so unfair.
I don't know. Honestly, this is my new theory in life. And all of my female podcast listeners, the both of you. But anyway, and there's so many people that come up to me at stand-up shows now. I go, I'm one of the two. But there's been 60 of those people. So.
And you ruined it for them.
Still good on you. You are one of the special two. But all of them vehemently disagree with me on this point, that men who are white with dreads is pretty much like having a black Visa card, as in it's just limitless. You just get it's the money version of pussy.
I don't get that. Actually, all two of you or 200, tell us. Is white man with dreads your guilty pleasure?
I don't even think it's a guilty pleasure. I think it's a thing of... I think it's like when a rich, like, valley girl from Malibu walks into a store and they say, I'm sorry, madame, we're closed. And then she flashes the black Visa card and they go, oh, registre, madame. I think that's it. That if Farbs walked along in his little reggae hat.
We all know which
him. To anyone. Maxim girls. Any book nerd. Someone who's saving their virginity for when they're getting married. I think you have Hillsong to have sex with this tall, skinny white man with dreads.
Yeah, so he just has to walk up and go, do you want to have sex? And like, oh my God, no, of course not. And then he just takes off his reggae hat and exposes his dreads.
Yeah,
and
they
like,
go, what is race?
Yeah, what is, yeah, but take off your beard. I'm going yeah, to suck your cook. All right.
The diff girls. So that's that one. And anyway, we're going to move away from gutter because that's all we've been talking about, as usual. I feel really filthy about it. So the next segment is, has anyone ever fucked your mum?
Wait, not your mum. Phrase it right.
Yeah, we gotta say it like this.
This isn't an just incest game. Okay, go on.
All right. I really want to know if that primary school insult of, I fucked your mum, bro. What are you going to do about it? And then you go, what'd you say about my mum? And then you have a little scuffle before some teacher says, stop that now, conduct card. That trigger to that specific set of circumstances. Has anyone since then had a friend that actually fucked their mum? Has that happened?
And if so, who would be like, yeah, I'll tell that shit on the podcast at 30,000 people?
I'll confess. We don't even have to give you a name. We can make a new one. We can say that your name is Professor Weaselbort. And so just say that, we'll give you that name, Professor Weaselbort. Please confess, are you the real life Marshall Mathers? I think that's what happened to him.
Well, are you talking about Stifler?
No,
Marshall, like Eminem.
Yeah, Stifler, it happened to him as well. God, all
did,
the good
did
guys.
Did that happen to Eminem?
I'm pretty sure that his stepdad was one of his college high school friends.
Shit. Yeah, those struggle songs were real.
Yeah, no wonder he really hated his mum.
Yeah,
and also second question to that, and it could go the other way around as well. If you're a woman, has one of your friends had sex with your dad?
Or if you're a woman, has one of your friends had sex with your mum? It could be like
either
a guy.
Way, yeah. We just want to know, has someone had sex with your parents, all right?
Jordan needs to jerk off to this news really badly.
Please. My internet connection's slow. Now, moving on.
Well, how are they going to even contact us?
Just write it somewhere.
you know what to do.
Right.
Maybe on Podbean. Do it there.
You know, but the Podbean doesn't do any. Like you just hit
us up.
What's
your
like,
email again, Ali?
Oh, yeah, that's right. We used to have it. Cheekoo1992@gmail.com. Cheekoo1992.
Confess@gmail.com.
There you go. Confess.
You will go to hell if you don't.
Oh, finally. Coming back to only 40 minutes in.
No, this is the sweet spot. That's exactly where it's supposed to be.
The main attraction of this pod. So we're reviving Ali's African heartland again. And that's because of one of the pod listeners who I met recently. And she appeared on the pod. Beatrice. She was...
That's right. The one who claimed that she knew a lot about astrology.
And didn't know anything. In fact,
knew probably about 5 of the star signs out of 12.
She's most likely listening to this. She said the same thing. And she's like, so you guys just did that horoscope thing once. Like, there's so much more to look into. Like, you should have done it then. Okay. So she was saying, and rightly so, that... So I like the pods. Like, they're funny. But the problem is, I can't remember what the last 5 of them were about.
Well, that's... It's the Seinfeld of podcasts. Pew, 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 pew. See you next week, folks.
That was actually... Okay, we're not going to do this segment, obviously, but can you tell them, in this sheer desperation of coming up with segments, what was the segment idea that you had?
Actually, let's do it.
No, you want
to
do...
We'll go to South Africa in a second.
Okay, okay. Oh, well, that
Please
was the
hold.
Climax. Okay, so... All right, so that was a very exciting...
If you've just joined us... I just went over to my editor because Ali and my editor live in the same house now. We're in Worlds Collide. And I knocked on the door and his response was pretty Kramerish, actually, when we're talking about Seinfeld. He just opened up the door, did kind of giddy up, eating something, which is what always Kramer is doing. But anyway, he didn't want to go on because he doesn't like the sound of his own voice. Pathetic. What is he, a mum?
Only your mom says that. In fact, the same Beatrice who I met, she also made another observation. She said, so it's clearly Jordan Seinfeld, Miss Love is Kramer, you're George Costanza.
Can you make that your catchphrase of the pod from now on? Ollie's getting upset.
And I think it's pretty accurate. She said that she was Elaine. So, okay.
Yeah, because she's the only woman that's ever been on the podcast. Or ever will be.
Yeah, no, we don't like the womankind in this area.
My mum was on once. But she could just be one of the many women that I date. Anyway, moving on.
Not be that creepy.
Anyway, I'll just say this. Can anyone defend Seinfeld from this brutal attack, which is, it has one joke. The entire show and franchise is pretty much just focusing on something that's slightly annoying that everyone just ignores and goes on with the rest of the day of their life, but magnifying it a lot. So,
but that's what, and not just Seinfeld. Every Jerry Seinfeld stand-up show after that has been the same. Every Larry David stand-up and all of his shows, they're all great. Like, Curb Your Enthusiasm is probably one of the best shows, but it's always just like, that's
nah,
so annoying.
No, Titus. But yeah, keep going.
Yeah, so it's so the question is, why can't they come up with a second joke?
Anyway, moving on to South Africa.
No, you, wait, hold up. You pay me out for liking Everybody Loves Raymond, which clearly has been voted the best show in the Ali household.
Yeah?
15 years in a row.
You know what? I 100% agree with you now. But it's the same thing. It's just the same. Instead of the same joke, it's the same episode for 9 seasons.
Dude, okay. But
it's a Danos Direct commercial.
I went on a date some like... maybe 4 months ago.
Right.
We never ended up meeting up again. But the one thing that we sort of agreed on was let's say, liking for the TV show Friends. And she was like, oh, yeah, I used to love that show. And I got really excited because by you and everyone that I meet hates Friends. So I excitedly said... And didn't you like Everybody Loves Raymond too? And he said, no, that's like the worst show that I've ever seen.
Worst. So, that's so harsh.
Not even her. She grew up in Penrith and still thought it was shit. It's quite depressing. Only in Pakistan can you think that that show was awesome.
Having said, I bet you because she was in Perth as well, Penrith as well, she would have been like, but you know what was the best TV series of all time? Meet the Habibs.
No, actually.
I really need to meet someone who thinks that.
No, actually, man, if you grow up in Penrith, like one of the things that I noticed, so one of my coworkers, she born, bred, you know, everything in Penrith, lives there till this day. She was saying that something about, I don't know, we were discussing like how 1 in 10 children, 1 in 10 men, 1 in 10 husbands in the world don't really know that they're not the father of their kid.
Yep.
Right? So we were discussing that, and I was saying, actually, I'm kind of safe in that one. And she's like, why are you safe? So I was like, as a joke, I just said, because like, if they're not half brown, I'll know that it's not mine.
Yeah.
And then she was saying, excuse me, this is where Penrith came out. She's like, excuse me, you know there's like more colored people in Australia than white people? And I thought that was a joke. She was like, oh, yeah. And she's like, no, true. I was like, no, but it's not the case. They're like nowhere close.
No, it's only in certain suburbs where they have chicken shops that sell both fried chicken and raw chicken. Yes.
And then she said, I've been to Blacktown. I can tell you that that's the case. I swear, these were exact. I didn't know like if I should laugh or if I should correct this basic demographic error that she's making. And she also genuinely believed, actually, this is like a serious thing, but she genuinely believed that if you're an immigrant, as soon as you land in Australia, like Centrelink literally just gives you money, keeps handing you out money, and suppresses if you're white. So she's saying there's institutional racism within Centrelink towards non-white people.
How did that rumor start, do you reckon?
It was probably like her mum or something just being like, I saw this black guy and he got more money than
me. But there's always that theory that Aboriginal people get more benefits or Africans get more benefits than white people.
Well, I'll tell you one thing.
Where does that start?
If you're an immigrant, like me, for instance, when I came to Australia, okay, obviously you don't get any benefits until you become like a citizen or something, right? When you become a citizen, there's like a waiting period of 3 fucking years or something. Once you get your permanent residency, there's like a waiting period before you can access any sort of benefits.
Oh, maybe they've got some sort of refugee status where they... Right, so they do get more benefits.
Yeah, well, but you're also like a
dude,
fucking refugee.
I'm sorry, but fuck that. That's bullshit.
No, why, dude? They're like, they're fucking refugees. If you okay, here's the thing. It's already so hard to prove that you're a refugee. If you have managed to successfully prove to a fucking state that you're a refugee, you really are a refugee. And in that case, do you still want to be slacked to these guys? We're like, okay, so stay hungry.
Right, so they're anyway, getting paid for how much work they did in proving that they're a refugee.
But it's also like refugees are a minuscule amount of immigrants. She thought that, A, most of the people in Australia are immigrants. Actually, that's kind of true if you look at it from cosmic. Everyone's an immigrant here except for the indigenous people.
Oh, very good point. Tune in next week where Ali will be on The Tonightly with Tom Baller.
Probably forcefully have to suck his dick.
Yeah, that's definitely the entrance in.
Yeah, Tom Ballard, he's been, anyway, let's not get into that one.
I think if everyone wants us to, I've gotten, I think the most amount of positive feedback I've ever received on a podcast, because I shat on Tom Ballard a bit last
week.
No,
but did you help me out in
what?
The stories. Wait, I don't know if these stories are true. Yeah, but the rumors.
Yeah, I don't really want to add to that one.
Yeah, no, let's not, because you don't know if it's true or not. Anyways.
But I think it is.
But it can be true. Let's just say if I wanted to work for The Tonightly Show, I might have to suck his dick. For real. Those are the rumors.
Pretty dark. Anyway, let's move on to something light. South Africa.
Yes.
Look, my curiosity was piqued from watching Farmland because I realized I don't know anything about it apart from the fact that they have hilarious accents. And
well, they're kind of cool. The accents are all right.
Yeah, but I think after looking at their politics, I've come to the conclusion, and after all this foo-fro about, is there a white genocide? Are the blacks still oppressed there? What about Indian people? Where do the Malays fit in all this? What about the Dutch? I think I came to the conclusion, how about we just nuke South Africa?
Hey, what about all the lions?
Maybe we can give them radiation suits if that's possible. When we attain that technology, we're nuking it.
Okay, that's the only solution. In fact, so I actually spent...
But don't you think? It's just such a mess. That place is... It's got a little bit of money, but at the same time, it doesn't have any money. It's just there's so many murders there. Everyone seems very angry. It seems like no one in South Africa has a sense of humor.
So let's put this chaos into context now.
Right.
So right, of course. So my mission for this pod was to do some rudimentary research on South Africa. It's actually pretty interesting. What I found out was that the farmer struggle has been going on for a very, very long time.
Is this the Dutch?
Yeah, these are the Dutch. So basically, South Africa was first populated by these northern African tribes that moved downwards. Then there were
when was that?
Around quite a while ago, like
thousands of years ago.
Yeah, easily, right? And then around 1600, sorry, these Dutch German populations started living in South Africa. They moved, right? And it also became
why were they getting. Were they banished on their views on how much they liked turnips? We like it slightly more than the German population generally does.
It was because it became like a new center. So there was a few immigration waves.
Was this when they were setting up their empire in Indonesia? And that was like a pit stop?
India. India, gotcha, yeah. So gotcha. They started the mainland East India Company within South Africa. These were the British, though, but there were a few...
The East Indian Company was the Tyrell Corporation
of real life. It legit was. It was basically like...
It owned everything.
No, East India Company was... It was a company, but they had their own army. They had their...
Yeah.
They basically ruled the entire India for the longest time until in 1857 when there was a mutiny from the locals, and then the Queen officially came to India and said, all right, the cover's blown. Yep, we own your ass, and it's the British Empire that owns your ass. Because before that, they would do it under guise of East India Company.
Okay.
Anyway, so coming back to South Africa.
That's a fun fact.
It's a fun fact. So South African farmers, which are basically from a German Dutch ancestry, who are known as, who later on called themselves as the Afrikaans in South Africa, they've had this sort of struggle for the longest time. Initially, what they did was they used the black people as slaves, right, for their own farmland. Until the British came in, then they sort of devised a way that those black slaves would work for them. Anyway, there was it's a long history, but...
Where does the Zulu fit in this?
So Zulu, the African Zulus, right? Yeah. So they're the black community that at this point have little to no rights whatsoever.
Were they? I thought that there was a different set of tribes that was subjugated by the Dutch, and the Zulu tribes were way too militant and scary to subdue.
Yeah, so there were certain tribes that were... But these were the tribes that were sort of all... But they were also like trans-border tribes, right? They also exist in like Zimbabwe and shit.
Right.
So Zulu...
Oh, so they were kind of... Zulu tribes are like Genghis Khan.
I mean, look, some tribes are harder to like take control of than others.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, the tussle was between the British colonialists and the new South African farmer community. And they sort of, and the British either tried to like move towards the Africans to antagonize them. Anyways, there's like a whole struggle between them that lasted for ages. And then in around like the early 19th century, they set up the apartheid state, which was done by the Afrikaners, the old farmers, that were the Nationalist Party or something, the NP, and they set up like a system where they knew that they were completely outnumbered, so they needed to keep everyone separate. So to make sure that there's no intermixing. Basically, the point was to keep a hold of South Africa and its economy, and not to let it slip
separating
away.
It achieve that.
So it's an overt way of controlling it, because if they try to be democratic, they can't be, because they won't have the power anymore. So they need to keep it separate, where they're like, okay, you cannot interfere in politics, for instance. Like, you're barred from it completely.
But were they saying that this is white territory and this is black territory?
Yeah, they were also saying that. In fact, there was white territory, black territory, there was colored territory, and there was also brown or Indian territory. And
that's everyone right. had their I own remember meeting things. A South African chick who was so hot. And she kept saying that, I'm part of the colored race. And I was, that is not a race. You're just mixed. And she's like, yeah. No, I'm my own race.
No. In South Africa, especially during the apartheid, that was its own race.
Right.
And if you were found to be colored, you would go into, they would take you and put you into like a colored group instead of a black group or a white group.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so this whole...
Wait, hang on. So the black, colored, and white community had their own governments?
Okay, so to be fair, the government was mostly just the white community's government.
Right.
But they all had their own figureheads. And it was favorable if your figureheads were for the apartheid system.
Uh-huh.
Right? Obviously, because... Anyway, so this stratification...
Were Indians included in this?
No, so they had their own separate thing going.
So every race had their own different...
Yeah, so a race, right? So brown... Colored was, as your friend was saying...
A race.
So a race, right? So there's a white race, then there's a full-on black race, yep. And then there's also the Indian race.
Right.
Anyway, so this apartheid system... And then in the 1950s... Mandela's movement, which till this day remains in power, sort of went against the apartheid system. They were initially supported by like most other resistance groups, including the communist movement, in the South African Communist Party, which was the best way for the white nationalists to demonize Mandela and his party too, the African National Congress. Because they say that these are all communists. And that was like a trending thing in the world. Because you could just shit on communists at the time.
And it was true, right?
What?
The Mandela's party were a bunch of damn commies.
A, there's because, nothing wrong with that. B, they...
But it is true.
No, but they had like alliances with the Communist Party. Because and they had a left-leaning view.
I hear that Nelson Mandela got a lot of his political philosophies from reading Chairman Mao's works.
Everyone did at the time.
Mao.
Why not Lenin? Chairman Mao, but like all of them. Like, if you were an alternative sort of a leader, you would be attracted. There's a reason why I have fucking Lenin in my bookshelves. Like, everyone was attracted to it at a certain time.
Even the Koch brothers. But more on that in the special edition that's only for Patreon members. And you really want to subscribe and listen to this one, because we've discovered the real eye of the pyramid. But continue, yeah, Ollie. Sorry.
Anyway, so there's like a long struggle. Eventually, the Nationalist Party realized that the structure that they've tried to maintain is hopeless, and they gave in.
Why was it hopeless?
Because there were too many. The international community had completely boycotted them.
Reagan didn't.
Well, Reagan was a champ. On their
side. Yeah, legend.
No, total I don't legend. Think he was on their side. They got like excommunicated from the United Nations. From like all sporting events in the world, there was heavy sanctions on them. Like, because this is like the fucking 80s and early 90s. This was
when, at this point.
Yeah.
At this point. I forgot it was so early. Yeah. When did freedom happen for them? 1994.
94.
So years after the Berlin Wall collapsed.
Yeah, years after that.
Holy hell!
So this is fairly recent. So and the nationalists realized that. Neighboring states were becoming hostile to them. They had zero sympathy. They knew it was only a matter of time before they have to capitulate. And even in terms of military, the African National Congress, not only were they had they become more militarized, but they had support of several other militaries around them.
So Zimbabwe and Kenya,
yeah,
and these
yeah
countries.
Zimbabwe, and there was for a little while even what's that other Namibia. I think they were also within the federal authority of... So anyway, there was like of South Africa. Basically, they knew that they're gonna have to capitulate. So they do that. But what happens is, it's very similar to like... So in a way, South Africa went through their decolonization process that late. every country that is colonized and becomes decolonized, two things happen. First, there has to be a freedom movement. In this case, it was Mandela's movement that has massive public support because most of the people that weren't part of the politics are now suddenly inducted into it and are given high level of importance by this freedom movement that has supposedly freed them, right? And then once they get into power, they have popular support for a long time, but what they do is they replace the old structure because it's really difficult to then form a completely new structure. Like, only communist revolutionaries are able to somewhat do that. But even that is more, it's different. Like, a typical example would be, so, for example, ISIS, right? If you looked at, 2 years ago, if you looked at the main figureheads of the ISIS military, like all of their generals, they were ex-Saddam Hussein army men, right? So, what it does is it forms a different sort of, a different form. But the levers of the power remain in the same position. So it's just a new driver that comes into it. So now...
You're so good at those metaphors, Ali. I just got to give you that little piece of praise.
Thank you very much.
Sorry.
So I have spent
just
money.
Really destroyed your flow. But good on you, mate.
No, so the same... So what happens is now a popular, extremely popular party comes into play. What they do is, like, you have to give Nelson Mandela credit where it's due. He could have sort of taken a revengeful approach to it. He didn't, because he didn't want to, like, ruin the economy. What his idea
didn't
was...
Didn't do the Mugabe special.
He didn't do the Mugabe special. So he allowed the economics, in a way, to be still handled by the white community, the African community.
And enshrined it in the Constitution.
And enshrined it in the Constitution. And but sort of like the politics became black, right?
So, you know what? This is going to be an unpopular opinion, but prison was pretty good for Mandela.
It did him good.
I think it did, because he was saying that to Tony Robbins when he interviewed him and said, "How did you survive all those years in prison?" And he goes, "I didn't survive. I prepared." And I think that's actually what happened. He became a really wise statesman because he was basically... locked in a permanent library for 30 years.
Yeah, and
he... And so he learned so much about how to lead, which is, as opposed to Robert Mugabe, who just stood in the mountains and then got hold of some AKs and then stormed the capital and was like, "It is our turn to eat."
Yeah.
There's this huge difference in them. So Mandela was... There's a lot of reason. It's not the symbolic reason. It's not like how Obama won the Nobel Prize for getting elected. It's not the same thing. Nelson Mandela was a very skilled statesman.
Yeah, and no, he most certainly was. Unfortunately, the level of quality of statesmen in the South African government just keeps on diminishing. Right, so he was very good at what he did. He came in, he tried to work it as much as he could. But what happens is that now all of these sort of tribal figureheads become part of the government. Now they start, in a way, exploiting the system, right? As in, like, use their own influence and newfounded power to make more money and sort of like continue the system of patronage to other members of their tribe. So it like, in modern day terms, it becomes, let's say, corrupt. But it always was corrupt. Even when the white nationalists were in power, they did the same exact thing. In fact, they did it more overtly. One of the ways of being corrupt is that you completely disallow someone to make money. Right.
But in terms of stealing money from taxation, was it as rampant as it is now?
Yes, it was always rampant. Now it's just the problem is.
So under the Nationals, they used to just strip money out of bureaucracies to the point that they were completely ineffective.
It still wasn't effective because they were extremely careful that the system remains intact at the time.
Right.
So they made sure it doesn't get too corrosive that start eating itself, which is what's happening now. But the thing is, corruption itself is not an issue. For most countries. I am one of those people that think that corruption is actually... it's a problem, but it's not the biggest problem in any country.
So why is South Africa's economy at a complete grind. Hasn't it been at zero growth for 7 years now?
Yeah.
And I think officially 32% of the population is unemployed, but I think unofficially it's
60% youth unemployment. But so now, my personal opinion on that is that if you want to look at the source of that economic problem, it actually resides in China.
Why?
Because China, when China was growing at like double digit figures, 12%, 13%, so these BRICS countries, right? There was like a group of countries that was formed, which were supposed to be the next big thing. So it was BRICS, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa.
Mm.
So one of the ways that these countries were able to rise up quickly was on the back of China, because China was growing at such a high rate that it eventually started obviously needing people to it had this huge consumer population that were able to buy shit, and they started buying things. So for example, in Brazil they would buy minerals. In South Africa it'd be the same thing. They would buy minerals. They would buy a lot of exports. And then eventually China's economy started slow down. It was a self-inflicted thing that they did, because their economy was also moving, and they need to stabilize it. So it couldn't be at 12%. It's now at like officially 7% or something, right? Which means that a lot of these countries that were able to sell shit to China were not able to sell that shit because there was less demand. So South Africa and Brazil are two countries that fell into that trap, whereas that the economy started to shrink because the demand wasn't high enough. Same thing happened in Australia. Like, we were selling a lot of coal to China.
And yeah, but our experience was different, though, because this is the other thing that I think has opened my eyes about studying South Africa. I don't know if nationalization is always the best way to go, man.
Yeah, no, it's...
it's a scary realization for me to come to, but maybe Paul Keating was right in privatizing Qantas.
No, it's not the best thing to do.
Because the other thing, they've passed a bill called the Annexation Bill. So they say that South Africa is open for business, but apparently you can open up a factory in South Africa, and as soon as it turns profitable, for no reason other than the government wants it, they can just take your property without compensation. And it's not just farmland. We're talking about textiles factories. If you start up a tech firm, these things can just instantly be nationalized.
Yeah.
So no one's going to invest in that country.
But that's also because of the ex-president of South Africa, Jacob Zuma.
Mm.
Because he was one of the key figures of the African National Congress. And then in 2004, there was... So he had a lot of problems. So there was a rape case against this man.
Really?
In fact... there was a rape case, there was corruption allegations, there was like a military contract that South Africa got, which apparently he took like millions and millions of dollars from. So there was an attempt to get rid of Jacob Zuma from power in 2004, and they kicked him out of the cabinet. But the thing was, Jacob Zuma was he played the Trump sort of a card. So he galvanized a populist movement, and he did it on the basis of, so this goes back, so after the apartheid movement, what a lot of Africans, black Africans, thought was that we're going to be rich now. Like, this is the liberation. This means my life is going to be exactly like the white man's life. But it wasn't like that. For one, it's infeasible to have everyone have that life immediately. I mean, you could grow towards it hopefully in 50-60 years. And secondly, the African National Congress didn't really change the structures of power. It wasn't a Soviet revolution where like they completely changed the way things were done. They, as I said, the power, the levers maintained, the drivers were just different. So Africans initially were like, okay, Matt, our life is going to change. And now they've reached a point, particularly after this the economic downturn, where like, we're not getting shit. So either I'm going to take the white farmers' land and make it my own.
Well, do you think that there's an economic argument for that, or is that just a scapegoat?
Well, it's a scapegoat because especially in 2018, large land holdings are the way agriculture is supposed to work, because we're not making most of our money from agriculture. The best example was, so exactly this was happened in India. So India gets a new government. The government is socialist. They say that we want to have land reforms. So what they do is they take large land holdings from these princely and sort of these bigwigs, right? The nobles, let's say. And they distributed them amongst farmers. So basically what the African farmers are trying to do now, the government did over there. At the time, and I must confess, for the first 22 years of my life, I genuinely thought that that's how it's supposed to be done. No, don't give a fuck about it. Give it, take it from the rich, give it to the poor. And yeah, it does sound amazing in theory. But what's happened in India now is, and which has changed my mind, is so what happens is if you give small land holdings to a bunch of people, they have more families. The way farming works is that more people, basically the more kids you have, the easier it is for you to grow crops, because you've got labor to work on your farmlands, because you normally can't afford labor elsewhere, because your land holding is so small that whatever you produce is only sufficient for you to eat.
Yeah.
So what's happened now is that the number of people that own the farm keep multiplying. That farm gets distributed further into other offsprings, to the point
where everyone has 10 kids in India.
Yeah, everyone has 10 kids. No, particularly because this is all agriculture, particularly in agricultural families, they have more kids. So if you move to urban centers, they might have 2 or 3 kids.
Mm.
It's just the way humans work. If you need kids, you'll have kids.
More kids.
So they started having kids, and now to the point where there's just not enough land. So farmers in huge, like, there's a farmer's suicide crisis in India, where farmers are literally committing suicide because they don't know what to do. So there's two options. Either you move to the city, you just abandon your 2 blocks that you have because it's not worth it. You move to the city, work as a laborer, maybe sell your kidney or some shit, you know, or you kill yourself. So what I'm saying is, like, if South Africa goes through the same thing, and South Africa is going through the same demographic changes that India went through at that time, which means that Africa is the new population hub. Africa's population is going to grow heaps. It's not South Asia. It's not East Asia anymore. At one time, we thought that the Chinese are going to go insane, or like East Asia is going to... It didn't happen, because they sort of... Their standard of living grew. The more educated you are, the less kids you're likely to have. In Africa, that's where the population is going to grow for the next 30 to 40 years. So if South Africa does that, and if, let's say, in a scenario where, like, all white farmers even give up their land, it will still lead to a dead end. So, okay, so basically what my whole thing was, that in recent times, the whole farmer crisis is for 2 reasons. One, the Nationalist Party is now saying, this is what happens. You wanted to end the apartheid system? You wanted to give all the power to blacks? We've just got these bunch of populist scavengers that are, like, looting from the system and giving it to, like, a few people and creating a kleptocracy, which is, like, people that relatives...
Steelocracy.
Steelocracy. And so they feel... So they're like, now we need to stop this. And so they have their own right-wing movement going. The blacks, on the other hand...
But is it big?
I mean, their population numbers are small, but they're highly influential, because white Afrikaners still... Bowlers. Yeah, they're bowlers, and also they still have a lot of power in terms of, like, they're much more consequential than some, tribal black man living in the outskirts of South Africa.
Yeah, yeah.
On the other hand, these huge populations of black people that thought that after the apartheid, they're going to get amazing... Didn't happen. They're still povo as shit. So now they're... So what's an easy... Unfortunately for Africa, because there's a racial divide, they blame all of their problems on, like, the white people, because they see them being rich. They see that these white farmers that have huge swaths of land and I have nothing, and Mandela promised me that my life is going to be better and it's not, so now I'm just going to take their land. So there's, like, right-wing movements growing on the fringes of both sides. And that's what's creating the real tension, and the news media is being sort of populated by that sort of a thing. Part of it is obviously the demographic changes and the way power... And it's a process. Decolonization, or in this case, like, the change, the apartheid change, is always a shit process. It takes time for it to get better. So they're still in that situation. The commodity, the Chinese economy slowing down isn't helping either. The growth rate for South Africa was like 0.8% last year, which is despicable. It didn't contract, but for like a country like South Africa, that is extremely bad because they've got a lot of potential to grow.
Right.
Because there's poor. So if you're poor, you've got potential to grow compared to if you're rich. So it's forecasted to be like shit. What I'm saying is that it has reached that critical point that India went through in the 90s. I see a lot of parallel in both these countries where the power is now going to move from the African National Congress, the Mandela Party, because it's been discredited, towards, you're hoping, to the moderates in South Africa. So there is another party.
So this is what I was saying. This, their divide between the opposition and their main government does not seem to follow what it does in most Western democracies. So in most Western democracies, ostensibly, you have one party that represents business interests and you have one party that represents labor interests, which is, you know, labor and liberal, right? But in South Africa, it seems like the African National Congress just represents tribal African interests. I mean, their logo is a Zulu spear.
Because they're losing, because they've got, so it's the same thing that like even Venezuela did. When they know that their economy is going to shit, they can't come up with you, they can't come to, let's say you're a South African citizen, and they say, vote for me because I do well. It's clear I'm not doing well, right? The economy is shit. So what do I motivate you to vote for?
Well, it seems like every time they run an election, I don't know what the dynamics are in the media there, but I would imagine that most of the media is owned by wealthy, white South Africans that probably hate the African National Congress.
Yeah.
So I'd imagine they get no favorable media coverage.
Yeah.
I think the only way that they get votes is by putting a huge poster of Nelson Mandela in the back of a stadium
and filming that. Yeah, that's it, right? So there's like affinity for the freedom movement.
Yeah.
That's what's giving them the votes. And also, Jacob Zuma, who had to resign recently, is very smart in galvanizing these really... So he plays... He does like what Pauline Hanson is doing, right? So he focuses on these fringe black community, which are in huge numbers, and tells them that the reason why these guys want to kick me out is because I am not falling for the urban South African technocratic way of doing things. He wanted to be a populist leader. So he manages to galvanize all of them because they're already in shit conditions. So they assume that the problem is the white people and other sellout black people that live in urban South Africa.
Mm.
So they vote for Jacob Zuma, and Jacob Zuma is basically just like making money.
Right. Okay. So that explains a lot, because when I was watching the ANC versus in their parliament, which is, I love watching parliaments of every different country. It gives you a real taste of the flavor of that place. And it's cool because they have all these African chants going on in parliament, whereas here you just have this like, shame, oh, shut up, sit down. Be the closest thing that you have. So it's really cool having that aspect to it. And also their accents are hilarious. What is that accent? Honourable members, you are not being very honourable at the moment.
I remember I actually saw one clip where the guy was saying, this is not a Trevor Noah show. This is not supposed to be funny. So apparently Trevor Noah is like a huge deal.
Yeah, of course he would be. And so anyway, yeah, the opposition party there seems awesome. It's just a normal Western parliamentary centrist party.
Yeah.
They seem to have policies. When I look up the African National Congress, it honestly seems like they're just making it up on the fly. They seem like they're reacting in government. When you look at the Democratic Alliance, they seem to have a competent climate policy, a competent economic framework, a competent education policy. And I know that this doesn't actually affect anyone that's listening to this, but vote DA, man.
Yeah,
DA seems like it's where
I think
it's
that
at.
Will happen. The problem is that the African National Congress never really had to work hard to get their votes.
Exactly.
Because they've still got the baggage of the freedom movement. But like every other country, it will change. At the moment, if you believe it or not, since apartheid, ANC has always won over 61% of the votes, right? Even
huge
now,
margins.
Even the last one was like they're still like at the top. But what I'm saying is like, if you look at other countries that went through similar changes, it will change.
Mm.
It will corrode. There'll be a new populist leader, probably moving up from the opposition, that will appeal to the urban classes and also somehow manage to convince a sizable portion of the rural community.
Well, that's what they were saying. Most of the votes of the African National Congress just come from rural votes. They're running the Republican strategy.
Yeah, they're running the Republican strategy.
And
but
in the city centers, and in fact, the Democratic Alliance runs a lot of the state provinces that are more wealthy. Which says a lot, which basically means if you're educated in the slightest, you understand that the Democratic Alliance is a normal party with sensible policies. Yeah. And I think that's it. It's just like the Democratic Alliance to me, I don't know what the shift would be here, but I'm perpetually wondering, where do they get their money from? Who is funding these guys?
There's like billionaires that do it. One of the known ones, their version of Koch brothers, is a billionaire called Gupta, who apparently single-handedly funds most of the African National Congress. I don't know anything about this guy.
The
if
ANC.
ANC.
But the Democratic Alliance, that's what I'm wondering, who funds them?
Oh, I wouldn't know. Well, maybe we should.
Probably billionaires that fund them. They seem like they're not exactly pro-union.
No, they're
weird. They're like a real, they're actually the definition of a centrist.
No,
party.
But you know what their problem is? Their dilemma is because they lose so badly, and they always have lost so badly, is that they ideally want to be center-left. As in, the founding members of the party would want to be center-left, but they have to encompass the center and the right, as the center-right as well, because they're like, in this country, you have to get as many alliances as possible.
Yeah.
It's impossible to break the African National Congress any otherwise. So that's why you see, like, disparate... But that's fine.
Yeah,
that's
they
like,
do have real higgledy-piggledy policies.
Yeah, but that's fine.
Which is cool.
Which is cool.
Yeah, they're a really interesting part.
But we've got to end this, because it's 1 hour, 21 minutes.
Okay, well, the point is, tune in to the official Friendly Geordies podcast that Patreon members only pay for, because we will be discussing the Koch brothers and their rise. And actually, and this is really InfoWars, but their invasion of the American Constitution.
There you go, James Caan. We do things that you like too. All right. See ya.
Pay for it, James.